basement of a church around the corner. Quietly I found myself a seat and held on to my little cup of coffee, utterly admitting my defeat. They talked about some steps and some traditions and some promises I didn't understand. Feeling out of place, I walked toward the back door. Then I heard the gentle voice of some old man. We're glad you're here, 'cause we've been there. And it's hard to find someone who understands and loves to care, put down your pain, cast out your fears. We've all been there, and we're glad you're here. I walked back in and sat right down beside him. Listened as someone poured out a heart. Thought about my past and my condition, all the years of living in the dark. She talked about her fears and her confusion. I listened as the tears rolled down her face. I realized I felt what she was feeling. When she finished, I heard someone say, we're glad you're here, 'cause we've been there. And it's hard to find someone who understands and loves to care, put down your pain, cast out your fears. We've all been there, and we're glad you're here. We've all been there, and we're glad you're here. We're glad you're here, 'cause we've been there.
Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeaker.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And Tim is going to come up and introduce our speaker tonight.
Thank you, Jack.
Conley drove a little bit farther than I did to get here tonight. And we really appreciate it. Been looking forward to this quite some time. About 6-7 months ago, I became aware that Conley had created a CD based on his recovery. And that was the music you were listening to tonight. We'll play a little bit after we finish. He's got a heck of a story. Not to put too much pressure on you, Conley, but it's showtime, buddy. Come on up.
My name's Conley, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody, and I am so glad to be here. Thank you all for having me, and I guess y'all can tell by the way I talk, I'm a little further up north. But I should have quit before that last six-pack because I got 3 brain cells, and I had to call Tim like 30 times to make sure where I'm going. And, okay, you sure? You sure? And then I got 1 brain cell said, he said, turn left. And the other brain cell is like, no, he said, turn right. And the other brain cell said, hey, let's stop him and get some liquor. So, anyway, you know, if we could, I like to, my favorite prayer is a third step prayer. And if y'all don't mind, if you don't know it, it's okay. Pray for me that I stay out of my ego. But if y'all don't mind, I'd like to open with that. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Oh, thank you. What is that? I hope I don't offend anybody. I don't intend to, certainly, but I call us zebras and I call normal people horses because we sort of look like them, but we're different. We're no better. We're not unique to each other. Of course, if I sit down on the front pew at the Smith Brothers Baptist Church and tell 80-year-old Miss Jenny about some crack chick or something that I spent the night with 2 days before, she'll have a heart attack. I can tell y'all, and you're like, yeah, I did that. So, and I have been accused of, Conley, you don't take this program serious enough when I speak. Frankly, I take this problem very serious. But I think what keeps a lot of people, I know young people, out of my first meeting when I was 24 years old, a lot of what keeps the younger people, and I am so glad to see so many younger people here tonight, and tickle shitless to see some older people too, because that makes me feel good. But I went to an AA meeting when I was 24. I was dating this girl, and she wanted me to go, and didn't stick because I found, you know, everybody was older or, well, I've never been divorced or I've never been to prison or I've never did this or I've never done that. And, you know, we know to add yet to that. But this is out of, this page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? This program is not glum, boring. I've made some of the best friends in the world. I made Scott and Tinsley and Kevin, three friends just hanging out, talking. But I try and speak from the heart. So if I say it, you know, go to the part where it says, pray for the sick man, pray for me, and let it go. Don't lose any sleep over it, because I probably ain't quit saying that. If you go to jail for saying that, I'd still be in jail. Music is a part of my story. It's a big part of my story. I came from a family where the men are men and the sheep are nervous. I mean, it's true men, you know. My dad was a tree climber, and I remember he'd stay sober about 6 months, and then he'd stay drunk 2 weeks. And I remember 10 years old, my mom coming to school, picking me up and taking me to a house of ill repute back home and saying, go get your dad. And here I am at 10 years old, knocking on the door and asking them to send my dad home. And my mom, bless her heart, she's 84, and she's like, do you still have to go to those AA things? I'm just got like four A's for some reason for her. My sobriety date is September the 20th, 2003. I think the 19th, I took like five and this is just part of it. Five Zanny bars and three beers, and I had a little 240 ZX, and the beer told me I was doing 85. The Xanax told me I was doing 5. So I don't know how fast I was going, but I went around this curve, flipped it, ended up breaking my neck, and actually, I've had 13 DUIs since 1975, and I didn't drink. I had my first drink when I was 21 years old. I started playing in bands when I was 13. It was a soul band. I was the only white kid in the group and what have you, and I loved it. I still have the guitar player, still one of my dearest friends. But I wanted to further myself in music and what have you, and I remember getting a guitar, and to get away from my mom and dad bitching, I would go to the back bedroom, and I would sit there and play my guitar and what have you, and just to get comfort and whatever. I always loved lyrics, songs. I always listened to the lyrics. I couldn't tell you who wrote it. I could tell you who wrote it, but I mean, wrote it, but I couldn't tell you who sang it. 26 letters, and we can make wars and make babies, and that amazes me. And I got interested in songwriting and just to get out of the house and all the stuff that was going on. I went on. I wanted to further my career, and Bill Lowry, bless his heart, down here in Atlanta, he started publishing some of my stuff, and you know, things. I got a little further and further, and had a little pop cut back in '79 or something, and that gave me hope. And I remember sneaking in the side door of VFW back in Gainesville, because I was 15 years old. All of the guys in the band were of age, you know, and I wasn't, and it was illegal for me to be there, but they needed a rhythm guitar player because all these guys were getting drafted and sent to Vietnam at the time. So they would slide me, they would turn the house lights down and sneak me in this little side door, and there was a PA system that sat here, and I would stand behind the PA and play guitar and sing, and nobody knew I was in there, you know. It was weird. But when I turned 21, it was the first time I'd ever been in front of an audience, and I was terrified. And because now I'm of age, I can get up there with everybody else. Somebody said, call me, drink a beer, and you'll calm down. I said, no way. I said, I've seen what it's done to my family. No way. And eventually, I said, okay, I'll try it once. Instant alcoholic. Instant. The minute it went down, I got on stage and played the best I ever played, did the whatever, and da 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 da. So after a few years of doing that, I said, I know how to quit drinking, because I'd become an alcoholic and started getting DUIs. And it was the good old boy network back up in my hometown. You give the judge $250. He gives the court clerk $50, and they write it off public drunk. That's how I got 13 DUIs. I had 10 when I left Georgia and moved to Nashville. Stayed in Nashville 23 years, never got a speeding ticket. But I remember going, Bill Lowry told me, he said, Colin, you need to move to Nashville and what have you, and you know, you're a little more country than, and this is a weird thing about it, I don't like country music. I don't. I just wanted to write songs. Some songs I do, but I love classic rocks, what I grew up on. So I took his advice. I packed up my wife, who hated me, and my six-month-old son in the back of an old 65 Bel Air, and I packed up all our belongings, and I packed up my alcoholism, and I moved to Nashville and took various jobs and what have you, and worked factories, and you know, I'd work third shift factories to pay you know, take care of my family. And I would try and hone my craft. I'd go into town on Music Row, and I would hang around with these writers who were old guys in their 50s then. I'm older than them now, but because, and I would tell them, I want to learn how to do what you do. I want to teach me. I wanted it so bad, but I wanted to do it right. And so they took a liking to me, and they were, they knew I had a problem with alcohol. And they're like, Conley, you know, man, you really need to get a handle on this and what have you. So I came back to Buford, Georgia. It's a place called Care Unit. And this was in 1984 to get sober. Got sober, stayed sober a few weeks, found another reason to go back out. And, of course, we know how we are. And after enough drinking and what have you, and thank God my children, I got two sons. One's a canine cop down in Broward County, Florida. The other's in Chicago, and he's a hip-hop producer. Don't ask me. I have no idea. But I remember in 2000, and I'm going to try and get this, the experience out of the way, because we've all been through this same thing or something similar or whatever. I mean, I've been shot. Never cross the fence with a loaded gun if you're drunk. Don't. Like I say, 13 DUIs, just all this chaos. I've been married and divorced three times. And in 2000, it was October of 2000, I had this wife who, if Jesus had had a wife, it would have been this woman. She was just wonderful. And I drank it up. I have nobody else to blame but me. And, you know, I hear people say, well, I lost this, I lost that, or whatever. I ain't never lost. I lost my car keys when I was 22. Everything else I threw away. I threw it away. And it took me a long time to admit that. But I remember I was 45 at the time in 2000, and they put me in this treatment center in Burns, Tennessee. It's about 40 miles west of Nashville. And I'd been there 3 weeks, and the song Tim was talking about, Learning to Live Again, it's the song that inspired me to do this recovery CD, because I thought, you know, I don't care what anybody says, there's money, dope, booze, whatever you want in the music industry. There isn't anything, but it's more acceptable there. That's how you get songs cut. You go out and drink with guys, or you go do, I remember going to a Merle H's 53rd birthday party. Sorry, I almost broke somebody's anonymity. And they had this huge glass coffee table, and in cocaine it was spelled out in letters that big, Happy 52nd Birthday, Merle. And there were straws around the table. And I was like, what'd you say the beer was? Because alcohol was my thing, man. Alcohol was my thing. And anyway, I went to this treatment center. I said, okay, I got to once again save my marriage. And which it didn't work. And I, since I was 45, I remember we went, and, you know, they would bus you to the, some of y'all know, they'd bus you to the meetings and whatever. So they bused us to this little church, and this kid, he was a behavioral health tech, he was driving the van, and he had like 5 years sober or whatever, and there was like 14 guys on the van. It was all men's facility, and it was about 10 degrees outside, and so he came up to me, and because I was 45, he's like, Conley, he said, will you go warm the van up? I said, sure. So he gives me the key. Now, I've never stolen anything in my life except a watermelon and a recovery van. for some reason, I got in this van, and I'm sitting there, it's warming up and what have you, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, Linda's gone, my house is gone, my job's gone, I wrote for Sony Music, everything's gone, and what have you, and to hell with it. I put it in gear, and I went by, and it was this little church, and they're standing out there after the meeting waiting on the van to warm up, drinking their coffee and smoking their cigarettes, and I drive by, blow the horn like, sorry guys, this bitch is going to Georgia. But I got down about probably, gosh, 500 yards, and I hear this guy say, what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, oh. And I looked, and this guy had snuck out of the meeting, went into the back seat of the van, and was asleep. And I said, I'm going to Georgia. And he's from Kentucky, and he said, well, I ain't. And I said, well, I'll put your ass out right here. And then something, he said, man, what are you doing? And it hit me. I thought, what am I doing? This is crazy. This is crazy. And I turned around, went back, and this little 25-year-old kid really chewed me out. And they took me back to the center, and the guy at the center, wonderful guy, bless his heart, I actually went back and did my internship at this place. They wouldn't let me drive the van, but they... But he took me in to his office, and he said, Conley, one of two things is going to happen. And he said, either we're going to file charges for grand auto theft, and you're going to go away for a while, or either you're going to get this program. You're going to start getting involved in this, and you're going to quit playing these mind games and what have you. And he said, but the thing is, he said, if you choose to go with the Tennessee State Patrol when we call them, before you do it, you're going to pick up that phone, and this is what got me, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody. But he said, you're going to pick up that phone, and you're going to call your son Adam, who was 17, and they had already moved to Florida, he and my second wife. I call her the hemorrhoid. I was really saying pain in the ass in front of the kids, but she's, no, she's really, she was a good mom. So, he said, you're going to call Adam and Tyler, my younger son, who's 11, and he said, you're going to tell them, fuck you. I had rather be a drunk and a drug addict than to be your dad. And he said, then you're going to hang the phone up, and he said, you're going to call your mom and your dad down in Georgia, and you're going to tell them, fuck you. I had rather be a drunk and a drug addict than to be your son. And it hit me. I was like, wow, there's no way I can do that. And I started to realize the damage that I had done to the other people that cared about me, even my own children. I remember Adam, the one that's a cop, I asked him one time, I said, what made you want to become a cop? He said, because they were always coming to the house and they stopped everything. They made it stop. And I have a great relationship with my two boys, and I am so grateful for that. But I remember one time, he was about 12, and I was drinking pretty heavy. And I'd wait till my royalty checks came in. I mean, please, I don't mean this to brag, but I've had cuts on Brooks and Don, Lone Star, Highway 101, a lot of different artists, and every 3 months you get a royalty check and what have you. So I'd make sure the house knowed everything else was paid and whatever, and then the rest was Conley's money, you know. And he asked me one time, he said, Dad, he said, why do you drink? And I said, because life is so hard to deal with. You know, especially in the music business. It is a cutthroat business, I got to say that. But I said, especially in the music business. He said, I'm 11. What do I do? And I saw at that point my 11-year-old son was a bigger man than I was. He really was. And so, anyway, after the van episode, there's a song on this CD called Learning to Live Again. I remember after that, not only would they not let me drive the van, I had to sit in the back. And we were going to another meeting at this church, and I was looking out the window. It was snowing, and it was cold. And y'all know that feeling when everybody's given up on you, and you've given up on yourself, and it's just, you're going through the motions, just hoping something will change. But I was looking out the window, and these lyrics started coming to me. My middle name's Ray. If you can find something that rhymes with Conley, my hat's off to you, other than fondly. So I use my middle name. But these lyrics, my name is Ray, it's 3 weeks today since I had my last drink. And I'm like, God, I do not want to write songs. I don't want to be a part of this business anymore. I just want to get sober. I just want to be a sober person. And I apologize to y'all for coming in those rooms and laughing at y'all and thinking, what the hell, why can't they get a handle on this, man? I have a disease. You know, I don't know why some people can't take penicillin. I can. But I don't understand why that same guy that can't take penicillin can leave half a beer at O'Charlie's. I don't get that. So I got into the program, and I remember telling God, shut it off. Stop it. Because once you start writing, I don't know what it is, it's, you know, it's just natural when things come to you. And I'm like, stop, stop, stop. God, I don't want to do this. Just shut the up. And the song, it stopped. 2 months after I got out of that treatment center, I sat down on my guitar and the song just fell out. And I'd forgotten all about it. And it just fell out. And it led to this recovery CD that I did. but I came back to Georgia in 2001, and I was climbing trees for my dad, and who was dry drunk, still pissed off the world. And I got into the meetings and whatever, and I built up like a year, and I met this girl in the rooms with a whopping 3 months sobriety. So she asked me to go to IHOP, and I thought, you know what, I got a year. I didn't think about her not having a year. So she said, well, let's go to IHOP. They're open after the meeting. So we went to IHOP. She said, could you please pass the ketchup? I thought she said, let's move in together and screw each other's lives up. So miscommunication. So next thing I know, her and I are doing meth and drinking, and I'm back out there, and we're living in some trailer somewhere, and arguing and chaos. You know how it is when we get two of us together, really messed up, and especially male and female. But it's finally, I went in one day, I packed my stuff, and before she got off work, and I was gone, and she called me on the phone. She said, I'll tell you what, I've never seen a son of a bitch that can leave as quick as you do. And we're good at that, man. We run. We know what to do. She said, I don't need to pick up. But I knew I had to do something. So I went back to the rooms. I called my sponsor, and by then, this was 2003. This was I had the accident a couple of days after that, and I called my sponsor. He said, "Are you ready?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm ready this time." So this is where I get into the strength. That's the experience. The strength was, he said, "Conley, I want you to start praying." Now, in between time, I spent 6 months in a state prison up there because I caught my third DUI. And I remember going to this prison to visit my uncle when I was 8, 9 years old. My mom would take him snuff every Saturday. I heard that snicker over there. But I said, "Why is he in here?" She said, "Because he drinks too much." And then I turn around, and, you know, at that time I was 47, and I'm in that same prison. But grace of God, I went in 3 months sober. I had the little red book Hazelden gives out, the soft cover. And these guys were out pumping iron and whatever every day, and that's fine. It's a wonderful thing. Don't expect me to participate. I'm too lazy. But I walked around that barbed wire fence and read that book 14 times in 6 months. And I said, "I'm going to get this." And I did my fourth step in prison via snail mail. I'd write my sponsor questions. "What about this? What does this mean? Well, what about this? What about that?" And a couple of days later, I'd get another letter back, and that's how we did my fourth step. So when I got out and read my fifth and whatever, I was still having problems with the God thing. And, you know, I've heard people say, you know, you can use the doorknob as your God. That's bullshit. You might pull yourself up from a drunken stupor, but that's about all the doorknob's going to do for you. I had to get a relationship with God. I was mad at God. I believed in God. I was just mad at Him because I was raised Southern Baptist and come on in every Sunday and every Wednesday night, but you're going to hell anyway, but come on in. And bless their hearts. That's not down in them. I just couldn't get it. But He said, you're going to have to start praying. So I said, "I don't know how to do that." And 48 years old, I don't know how to pray. And He said, "You talk to God like you talk to anybody else." So I prayed. I had my little prayer every night. I got down on my knees. I said my little prayer. And about 3 weeks later, we went out to dinner. And He said, "Have you been praying?" I said, "Yeah." And He said, "What are you praying, Conley?" And I promise you, this is all I had to work with. I said, every night I get down on my knees and I say, "God, what the fuck ever, amen." I did. It's all I had to work with. I didn't know Him. He didn't know me. So whatever. If I die in my sleep, I don't care. What the F ever. And my sponsor's like, and he's like, "Man, I don't know if that'll work." And I'm like, you know, he said, "You may want to expand that a little bit. change the language." But this is what blows me away. 10.5 years later, and please tell me if I'm wrong, I'm still saying that same prayer when I say, "Thy will, not mine, be done." So even then, with a sick, totally sick, unspiritual person, He was telling me how to pray in the language that I was used to. Because what the F ever, and Thy will be done. But what had changed was my attitude. And that's when I started listening. I started, there's an old saying, the learning is in the listening, and the healing is in the sharing. So I started saying, you know, man, maybe this thing, it will work. I went for, I did change it, you know, from after meeting with my sponsor. I got down, I said, okay, God, I don't know what you want me to say, but I'm not going to say what the fuck ever. But just whatever. Just keep me sober another day. And then I'd get up and ask him the next day. And the next day. And I would go to those damned meetings. And can I ask her name? Aurora? It's a pretty name. Sort of like Conley. But Conley means raging alcoholic in French. I mean in Irish, I'm sorry. Aurora knows me better if you're an alcoholic. The only person I know in this room that's an alcoholic is me. Aurora knows me better than my own sister. She knows me better than my mom. She's a zebra. We know how we are. And we know each other better. And that's why this works. And it was y'all that helped me to get this. And I started working on that relationship with God, and I started saying, God, bring me closer and what have you. And there was this one girl in the rooms, and she just celebrated 28 years, and she was like, call me when she was sort of sweet on me, I guess. She said, when's your 1 year? And I'm like, get away from me. Go. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Go. I mean, you know, I was scared to death. My sponsor said, I said, I know no relationships for a year. He said, no. No relationships for 10 years for you. So, but, and I do. Back to this girl that I had moved in with, and she, bless her heart, she was 6 months sober, and she found out she had terminal cancer, lung cancer. Well, I had come back. Ended up moving to Florida in 2007 and actually became a certified addiction specialist. And I came home. My dad, who died 2 years ago, I came home for the summer and just to help my mom with him because he was a big man. And I know this sounds gross, but it was tough changing his diapers. And it didn't matter that I was 8 years sober. Changing this man's diapers and him looking at me saying, why the hell don't you go back to Florida? What are you doing here? And the program and God and y'all got me through it. I was like, bless his heart. He don't get it. He don't understand. And that's okay. I told him one time, I said, I love you, but I don't like you. And I said, and I know you love me, but you don't like me. And I said, and I'm okay with that. And he said, I am too. I said, good. I buried my dad 2 years ago and was able to do it in a dignified way, knowing that I had 8 years sober and that he didn't have a clue. But while I was up here, Sheila came by the house, and the girl that I had moved in with when I had a year clean. And she said, I've been sober about 6 months now. I said, good for you, good for you. And she told me she had terminal cancer. And she said, but I'm going to beat it, Conley. I'm going to beat it. So I took her to her sister. She only had a sister. And I took her to chemo, radiation, and what have you, and hung out with her. And I didn't talk to her about the program. I just tried to be a friend. And where this is what the program did for me, where we used to do meth and drink and fight and be up all night vacuuming the floors and stuff, or picking apart a disposable lighter. I'm sure you've done that. I can take this thing apart and put it back together. I bet you work 4 days on it, and you're like, hell, I'm going to bed. I've been up a week. But I was able, the last 13 days of her life, I was able to go into the hospital and lie down on that bed next to her and hold her in my arms and love her like a sister. And give her as much peace as I could and make my amends for what I had done. And the 13th day, her sister, who was a nurse, they say your hearing's the last to go. Her sister said, well, Colin, I'm going to get some coffee. You want something? I'm like, no, no. And bless her heart, I would, you know, I'd rub her head and I would kiss her hand, and she would pull my hand up to that mask, and even up to 2 hours before she died, and like she was kissing my hand, and that gave me some sort of forgiveness on my part. But her sister got up to go get a cup of coffee, and I bent over her and I said, let go, baby, let go, just let go. And I am so grateful. Had it not been for sobriety, you know, I could have killed her, she could have killed me, it certainly wouldn't have turned out the way it did. But I was able to learn. This program has taught me how to respect women. I have the utmost respect for women. They're not bitches and hoes, and they're not, and I get, well, except for one in Macon, Georgia, but I'm joking. But this program has taught me how to respect women. It's taught me how to be a brother to Eric. It's taught me how to love you. It's taught me how to love me. It's taught me how to stop and go help somebody when I can. It's taught me how to get up and say that third step prayer every morning. And it's given me so much. I went back to Florida after she died, and I got my dad in a facility, and I got a call on September the 20th of 2012 that my baby sister, she was 46, she had it's called a squamous cystitial pneumonia, that she died. And she had two little girls. Well, one's 22 now, and the other's 12. And it blew me away because that was my sobriety date. And I left Florida, came up, was able to call my sponsor, and he brought my 9-year medallion over to the funeral home, and I was able to put it in her casket because that's all I could give her. It was nine years of being sober and clean and try. But y'all taught me how to handle those things. I used to think that, I mean, God doesn't do neon lights and what have you. He talks through Kevin. God used Kevin to tell me something, tell Scott and I something before this meeting. It wasn't Kevin. God just used Kevin. This telephone, I don't know how it works. That signal goes out there and what have you, and so-and-so is going to pick up depending on who I call or who calls me. I don't know how all that works. I take for granted because I don't care. As long as I pay my bill and it works, I'm okay with that. Then why can't I believe, if I can believe that works, why can't I believe that God is going to use you or you to come up and tell me something that I need to hear? It's how God works. And it's that simple. And when I put all this other stuff out and I stopped it, and what this person's idea of God or this one or whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, there's a song on the CD that I did called Keep Calling. It says, some call me God, some call me Jesus, some call me Jehovah, some call me something. I'm listening when you're flying high, I'm listening when you're falling. Call me what you want, just keep calling. And the thing is, if I know that if I keep doing that every day, if I get up, somewhere right now a kid is dying. An innocent child is dying. And it should be me. It's not. I don't understand that. I don't understand God. But that was my problem to begin with, because I was always trying to understand God. It doesn't matter. As long as God understands me. The rest, it doesn't matter. So I just put one foot in front of the other, and now I'm back yet again. My mother's 84. She's got dementia. And there's nobody to take care of her. So I left my job in Florida. I said, I got to go do what I got to do, and that's what I got to do. And I'm okay with that. I know God's going to take care of me. And I mean, how many of us in here can ever say he's ever let us down? He never has. Maybe he didn't do it the way you wanted it done, but he didn't let us down. The biggest hope that I can share, experience, strength, and hope, a cool thing. I was about 6 months ago, there's this guy, his name's Tom Kiefer. I don't know if y'all are familiar with him. He was lead singer for a group called Cinderella. Tom and I were really good friends in Nashville. I didn't know who he was because I was into country music. But his girlfriend and I wrote a lot, so Tom, we hung out a lot together. And Tom liked the fact that I didn't know who he was. I don't know. Anyway, we started writing songs or whatever. I hadn't seen him in 13, 14 years. But about 6 months ago, I got a call. I said, hey, Conley, man, I've been trying to get in touch with you. I said, who is this? He said, it's Tom Kiefer. I said, oh, hey, man, how you doing? Da, 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 da. And he said, I just recorded. So I say this to say God's still using my songs somehow or another. He said, the song that you and I wrote, he said, 15 years ago. He said, I just released a CD, The Way Life Is or something. He said, I just released a CD, and he said, I cut that song, Ain't That a Bitch, that you and I wrote. You remember? And I'm like, oh yeah. And I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about. Because I was so wasted. I didn't have a clue. I went and bought the CD to see what it sounded like. I did. Went to Best Buy and picked up the Tom Kiefer CD, and I look and my name's on it. I'm like, shit, I guess I did. I was there. But the cool thing about it was, I mean, is God still works in our lives, and things will change. The thing I told you, when God gives us something, and we are, the big book says it, we're an intelligent, able, friendly people. And we are. We got great hearts. I tell you what, there ain't no better people on the face of this earth than alcoholics and addicts, in my opinion. I believe that with all my heart. If we're using, we ain't worth shooting. But if we're in this program and we're doing what we need to do, there ain't no better people on the face of this earth. Can't nobody convince me of that. And I am so glad to say that I am an alcoholic, that I'm in recovery, and that I'm an alcoholic. I know I've taken up quite a bit of time. I told you to talk a lot. Of course, Tim knows this about me. The thing is, life is good today. Things are where they're supposed to be. I'm where I'm supposed to be. And I just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And I keep going to my meetings. And I take it serious. I had this guy tell me, I was his counselor down in Florida. And he came over. He said, Colin, he said, you know, I'm so afraid to go home. He'd been down there 90 days. And I said, why? He said, well, and this guy had a wife and two kids and whatever. And he said, I live in this neighborhood. And he said, my next door neighbor, he said, he always comes over and says, hey, man, let's have a beer. Da, 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 da. He said, and we start drinking. And he said, and then we end up going to the, his garage, and we do a little coke, and he said, I know he's going to, when he sees me after I get home, I know he's going to come up. And I said, do this. Close your eyes, imagine your children and your wife and your house and your life and everything worth living for here. And then imagine this guy that could care less whether he pulls you back in that hole or not. And he said, I can do that. And I said, just tell him I don't do that anymore. He said, well, if he comes back, I said, knock the shit out of me. Hit him as hard as you can and say, what don't you get? Because I tell you what, if I did, and I'm not saying you did, Eric, look, this is just to prove a point. If I did to Eric's family what more than likely Eric's done to his family, I know I have, he'd beat me. If somebody did to your family what most of us have done to our family, would kill them. So I had to go look in a mirror and say, okay, Connie, there's your guy. Now what you going to do? And I said, I'm going to start asking for help. So anybody here, if you know, it's some people, I love what a friend of mine back home says. He says, two people can come into an AA meeting and one say, you know what, this may work. And the other one say, you know what, this will never work. And he said, they're both right. God bless y'all. Thank y'all so much for putting up with my stuff. And I enjoyed this. Thank you so much, Tim, for having me down.
Conley, thank you so much. You really touched me. That was really great. Thank you.
Some folks call me all the time, and that's all right with me. Some I haven't heard from since May the 14th, 1983. But you've always got the number, and I've given you the freedom to choose. You may not know my name, but you'll know who you're talking to. They call me God, they call me Jesus, higher power, and Jehovah. I'm listening when you're flying high, I'm listening when you're falling. Call me what you want, just keep calling. Some ask me for healing, but they don't really think I can. Some ask me for miracles, 'cause that's the kind of God I am. Some folks pray for answers, and I don't wanna make them. Though I'm seldom early, I'm never late. They call me God, they call me Jesus, higher power, and Jehovah. I'm listening when you're flying high, I'm listening when you're falling. Call me what you want, but just keep calling. I'm listening when you're flying high, I'm